is my old friend. I've come to talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone. Turn my collar to the cold and damp. When my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light that split the night and touched the sound of silence.
Welcome back, folks. I hope you had a wonderful weekend. This is Republic Broadcasting Network. We have Mike, who's in the sound room right now, is our board engineer. And I am your guest host, Maggie Rose. And this is Jeffrey Bennett's The Edge of Darkness, being brought to you proudly here at Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, and real people, folks. That's what we're all about here. This is the no-spin zone of the RBN. And today's date is the 30th of January in the year of our Lord, 2023. The time is 5:02 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we welcome you back here to another edition of The Edge of Darkness. Now, I hope you all had a really good weekend. We've been getting some really cold, nippy nights down in the 20s, but today was a bright sunny blue sky with little patches of clouds, but still very nippy outside. And we were kind of very stressed out this weekend because of a situation that happened back in October, which I'm going to share with you. But I'm learning more and more now just how corrupt our court systems have become and what they've been doing by pulling us into their jurisdiction in what we call their statutory courts, okay? Now, I'm not one of those persons that's going to go into this, the natural citizen thing, or I'm a citizen of the land, sovereignty sort of thing. There is a lot to be said for that, but unfortunately, if you go into that too much, all you're going to end up doing is kind of digging yourself a digger hole and finding yourself buried in it. And I've seen too many people who have found themselves in really big trouble by following a lady by the name of Anna Von Reitz. She is not a judge. She's declared herself judge. She's declared herself as the judge, and her husband is the king. Okay. And so they have taken this natural sovereignty or natural born citizen way too far, okay? We are natural citizens, but I don't even like using the word citizen, because citizen is actually the name under what we call the corporations. So I'm going to tell you a story, a true story of what really happened. This is not a bedtime story. For those of you on the East Coast, it's a little after 8 o'clock, so it's way too early for your bed. But this is a true story of what happened leading up to this morning. And I'm going to basically just kind of leave it up to you guys to kind of determine what you think. Now, a friend of mine who happens to be up in the northern Oregon area had told us about trying to file something, doing it as a pro per persona, and do not plead. Because the minute you plead guilty or not guilty or anything, you're pulling yourself into their jurisdiction. So what we did is we wrote a 3-page letter telling the story of what had happened, how it happened. And I want you all to understand is that when you look at the highways, whether it's Highway 80, Highway 680 running through parts of California, the I-5 goes from the Canadian border all the way down to the border of California before going into Mexico, we're talking about a federal highway. Now, for some reason, I guess state troopers, as they call them in Oregon, highway patrol officers, as they call them in California, for some reason, somehow they've managed to find a way to have jurisdiction of the federal highways. And I don't know the legalities of how that goes about. But what it is that you are really not in their jurisdiction, is the way it's been. I've been educated about this. Basically, what it is you are a private citizen or private person driving your own privately owned vehicle on the highways and byways, which you have the right to be able to travel from point A to point B, especially if our localities, our counties, our states, and our federal government aren't giving us proper transportation, even though they're using our tax dollars supposedly for a lot of other issues that are actually should be using for improving our infrastructure and our highways and byways, and they're actually not doing that in some cases. So when it comes time to driving on, like, let's say the I-5, which is a federal highway, yet somehow these state highway patrol officers or state troopers are able to pull you over and give you a ticket. And now, of course, they have these cams on their cars and on their bodies, and they're able to present that this is what happened. Now, what's interesting is what we saw today made it look like he was way far behind when he was following our vehicle, but actually he was so close that we couldn't even see him in our mirrors, okay? So that's the number one that we wanted to kind of clarify that. So I'm going to tell you the story, and then I'm going to leave it up to you to decide. Do you think what the judge should have seen as retaliatory harassment, do you think this was retaliatory harassment? And this is just a warning to let you know that when it comes to the driver's manual that the state gives you to take your test by, that driving manual is all you have to go by. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick up my little laptop here for a minute because I need to go pick up that manual. So when I actually tell you this story, I'm actually quoting right out of the manual itself. That's the best way to do it. So let's see if I can find the manual. Here we go. Okay. We happen to live in the occupied state of Oregon. And I once thought California was pretty bad. But from what I'm hearing from everybody, Oregon is actually worse in some ways than California. Okay. So now I'm back with the computer. I actually walked into the kitchen with it. So because we do not believe in radio land and any dead airspace. So this is the story of what had happened. We had been up in northern Oregon. We were traveling down to southern Oregon for an appointment. And where we were going to be going, there were going to be no restroom facilities. So I had my husband pull over into a rest stop. This rest stop was on the I-5 corridor just outside Creswell in Eugene, Oregon. So for those of you that don't know, Eugene, Springfield are sort of like midway. They are 3 hours. Eugene and Springfield are 2 hours south of Portland, about an hour south of Salem, 2 hours south of Portland. And we had probably about another hour, hour and a half to go. We had just left Eugene and the Creswell area, and we had not quite made it to Cottage Grove. And we pulled over at a rest stop there so he could let me jump out. He was pulling our camper, which was 8 by 4 feet across, and we were pulling it with our van. And on the very back of the camper, it had my legal name, first and last name for Oregon governor, okay? And very big green and yellow sign with the Oregon State bird, which is a meadowlark that was in the upper right-hand corner of the sign. So there's no way you could not see this sign because it was literally taking up the entire width and length of the camper that we were pulling, about a 23-foot camper. We pulled into the rest stop, and when I jumped out, there was a man. He was in tears, and he was right there, right below the sign of the men's bathroom. There were no signs around that said no panhandling, okay? But he was sitting there in his walker, and he had his service dog with him on a rope. The dog was contained. And the man had, he was sitting on his walker with a kind of a nasal cannula mask on and three tanks, huge, big green oxygen tanks next to him. And so I went up to him. And of course, you know, I've dealt a lot with homeless people and people who are below the poverty line. And he was very medically fragile. I'm a licensed nurse. I could tell right away he was medically fragile. He was very upset. And I said, what's going on? And he says, well, he said, there's a subcontractor that's contracted by the state of Oregon that handles these rest stops. And the subcontractor that works for them is has gone and called the police and the highway officer, and he wants to have me arrested. He wants to have me cited, and he wants to have me arrested. And he said, all I'm trying to do is feed my family. That's all I'm trying to do is feed my family. And I said, well, what's he complaining? He says, well, he's saying that he doesn't like the fact my dog barks if people walk by and that I'm sitting too close to the bathrooms. So I said, okay, let me go assess the situation. So I actually walked all the way down the parking lot to where the subcontractor was. And I asked him, he goes, well, I can't stand homeless people and poor people. That was the first thing he said. And then he kind of waved this paper at me, and I kind of took the paper and took a picture of it. And I said, where does it say that he can't be here? And he says, well, they haven't updated it yet. I said, so therefore you're trying to enforce something that hasn't been actually written. So therefore it hasn't been updated, but therefore you're still trying to get a highway patrol officer to go ahead and enact this by either giving the guy a citation or giving the guy, a ticket and or arresting him. He said, yeah, I've dealt with people like him before. I want him arrested. So I said, is there any way we can work out a compromise for this guy? He says, yeah, he can go way up there in the trees, which is probably about 200 feet away from the building, in a grassy area under the trees where nobody would see him. And I said, well, that doesn't make much sense. And so I went back to the gentleman and I said, let's get you away from the men's bathroom and let's bring you over here. You're not on the sidewalk. We're going to make sure you don't get on the sidewalk. And we're going to put you in this little patio area right here where still, you know, you'll be on the women's side of the bathroom now, but at least people will be able to see you and will be able to come over if they want to, you know, give you a few dollars for gas or whatever. So I was trying to defuse the situation. Well, the subcontractor, he didn't like that. And so I said to the gentleman, I said, you know what? You better call your brother. And it doesn't say there's any signs here. You can't be panhandling. And I understand that you're struggling. Everybody's struggling. Nobody has gas money. People are having a hard time feeding their families. I get that. I understand where you're coming from. I said, I will give you some gas money if you have your brother come get you, pick you up and get you and your dog and your three oxygen tanks out of here. So he called his brother and his brother was on his way. Well, right about the time that the brother showed up, I was trying to help load the gentleman and his dog into the truck. His brother was staying in the truck. He wasn't really helping. But, you know, I was trying to load him into the truck. And this was right outside an area called Sangua, which is just south of Creswell and just north of Cottage Grove, Oregon, at mile marker, just before mile marker 70 is where we were. And so I'm trying to help load him up. The trooper shows up. I run over to talk to the trooper to let him know what's going on. And the subcontractor jumps out of his vehicle and sprints all the way across the parking lot and comes over to where we are and starts hassling me. And I decided to defuse the situation by leaving. I turn to the trooper and he goes, well, you're not the one that called me. And I said, no. He goes, well, then I don't want to talk to you. I said, you don't want me to tell you what's going on and what I'm trying to do? No, I don't want to talk to you because you didn't call me. I said, okay, fine. So I went over, finished putting the three tanks into the back of the vehicle, gave the brother some gas money, loaded this fragile man and his dog up into the truck, and they took off. Well, a few minutes later, the trooper, he left in a hurry, and you could tell he and the subcontractor were upset that I'd even helped this man get in his brother's truck so he could leave. So he had already left the premises. There was nothing to have to deal with. That the problem was solved, right? So my husband and I, we leave the rest stop, and we're at mile marker. Let me see if I can find it right here. We are at, this is what I consider harassment and retaliatory. We were at mile marker 176 at that point. So there's the rest stop, and then heading southbound on I-5, you're at mile marker 176. So we had passed the 176, and I turned and I looked, and that was the exit to Sangua, and you could actually see the brother, the two brothers had taken the exit. They were off of the freeway. They were on the exit. They pulled over for a minute on 170, right off of the, the 176 exit is what it was, and they were sitting there just for a couple minutes as we went by, and I could see them taking off. So then my husband drove, and we drove at going about 55 miles an hour, pulling the trailer, the camper, and we hit about mile marker 170. Well, there is this highway patrol officer. He's very young. You can tell he's green behind the ears. He hasn't been at this very long. And he was sitting there in the medium lane facing the southbound, you know, traffic that was coming past him. And as we passed him in mile marker 170, he looked right at my husband, who looked right at him as we went by him, and he pulled out immediately. And my husband said, "Oh, he's pulling out. I think he's after us." So right about mile marker 169 is when he pulls us over. Now, what had happened is when he pulled out behind us, he was so close to us, he didn't leave what they call in Oregon the cushion space, where you can actually see people behind you. And you have the proper mirrors on both sides where you can see, okay, on both sides. Well, we couldn't see him at all. He was that close to our camper. He had to have been. And so my husband said, well, maybe he's wanting to pass me. So my husband slightly went over to the very far right of the right lane. We were in the right lane, the far right lane. There's the left lanes and there's the right lane. He was in the far right lane. And his two tires touched the fog line. That's the white line, used the strip that's right there. And then after the fog line, there's a little bit more strip of the edge of the freeway. And then there's those ruts that if you happen to fall asleep and you go over the ruts, they wake you up with the the jostling effect. Well, we had not even gone that far over. The two tires of the van and the camper had touched the fog line. All right? I want you to remember that. It touched the fog line. And then when my husband pulled back into the right lane again is when the police officer pulled back and he pulled him over with his lights going. Gave us a ticket, he said, for driving for failure to stay in a lane. Now, first of all, my husband had pulled over slightly to the right thinking, well, the police officer is going to want to go by us. And he wanted to see if he could see him in his mirror, and he couldn't see him in his mirror. And then when he said, I can't see him, he pulled back all the way into the middle of the right lane again. And we were going around a curve. So even doing that, you're going around a curve and you're trying to see if this police officer is right behind you. And so as you're going around the curve, yeah, your tires are going to go slightly on the white line, but not cross over it. And then you're going to come back again. And then his tires went kind of a little bit on the white line again, but didn't cross the white line, didn't go into the emergency, what you call the emergency lane. So we wrote a letter, a 3-page letter to the judge, and we explained what had happened. That what had happened at the rest stop, it was the same highway patrol officer, that the sign on the back of my vehicle was, you know, me running for governor. And of course, most of these highway patrol officers are very, very liberal, and they were all supporting Kate Brown, who is one of the most criminal governors that the state of Oregon's ever had. And of course, they were going to support her best friend, who wanted to be the first gay lesbian governor in the governor's mansion. I don't care if you're going to be a governor, you want to be gay in the governor's mansion, but that's not what you run on your platform. And that was how she was running on her platform. Not that she really cared about homelessness or any of those other things. She was running, I want to be the first gay governor in Oregon. And actually, Tina Kotek notes that Kate Brown was the bisexual. So, you know, but to have that on your website, that didn't impress me very much as leadership. And here I am, the fourth woman running for governor in Oregon against these three women, Tina Kotek, Betsy Johnson, and Christine Drazen. So it was very obvious with what happened at the rest stop, me being a good Samaritan, trying to help a medically fragile man, getting him out of there before there was any escalation or problems between him and the subcontractor, getting him and his dog out of there. And then there's this retaliatory. It was so obvious it was retaliatory. Well, my husband's first mistake, we found out later, is he should have never pled, I'm not guilty. Not guilty or not guilty. The minute you plead, you are putting yourself in their jurisdiction, which we didn't understand that that is how so much of the corruption in the courts have happened over the years, is they come up with all these statutes. Now, remember the word statutes, or what they call in Oregon, the Oregon Revised Statutes. It's the ORS, like O like an orange, R like in Romeo, S like in Sam, ORS, okay? So what they've done in order to get revenue for their courts, for their cities, they try to find just about everybody guilty they possibly can. And what turns out with you trying to tell your story is you're trying to tell the facts leading up to what happened, hoping the judge is going to understand that this was not a crime or a violation that you committed. You didn't harm anybody either. You didn't harm any property. You didn't put your life or anybody else's lives in danger. It was a few seconds, your tires on the white light, and then pulling back into the lane, okay? So we had the court hearing by Zoom this morning because when we drove up to Eugene, we said, listen, you know, we want to have a jury trial of our peers, you know, which is your constitutional right. Well, first of all, the traffic court won't let you do that. So right away, they're violating your constitutional rights. Okay. They said, no, either you pay the money now just to be done with it. That's what they count. You don't want to lose time from work or time without pay. So you'll just pay the money, whether it's $200, $300, $400. They don't care. But if you decide to challenge it, now this is pissing them off because now you're taking really time away that they don't want to be spending. And then they have to have the state trooper come in or the highway patrol officer come in or the law enforcement, the cop, the police officer come in. And it just, you know, I guess it's pissing off the judge, right? Because you're not just going to roll over and play, okay? But the mistake is that we should not have ever said we are not guilty. We should have never pled. We should have challenged under what they call persona, we should have challenged that we're not in their jurisdiction, which we really aren't. So the thing came on Zoom. We were there at 8:30 this morning on our computer, long distance, and she heard a couple other cases, and then she brought us up, and she wanted to see us through video. So I was my husband's witness. Well, what's interesting is she lets the state trooper talk first, and then my husband goes, well, I never got to see the video. We asked to see the video. They wouldn't let us see the video. Yet we just sent you two letters, 3 pages each, with my name, certified signature, notarized on it. And you gave a copy to the law enforcement officer to read. So he knows what our complaint against him is. But we don't have any way of really being able to read what his complaint. Well, his complaint is that you committed a violation by failure to stay in a lane. And under the ORS, you know, you committed a violation. And what? No, that's not what happened. Well, okay, so she says to my husband, you have the ability now to call a witness. And so, but your witness can't tell the story of what they happened because that's hearsay. How is it hearsay when I actually experienced what happened and I'm telling you exactly what was said between me and these other individuals? That's not hearsay. I'm giving my experience, what I saw, what I heard, what I observed. So first of all, that's not a story, and it's not hearsay. It's the facts. Number two, she would only let my husband ask me a question as the witness. He didn't know what question to ask me. None of us are prepared for this. We're not attorneys. We're not lawyers. And so all he did was say, well, where did this start? Did you see this happening starting at the rest stop? And I said, yes, that's what happened. That's what led to this situation. And the judge wouldn't let me go any further than that, right? Well, she decided that she was going to find guilty based on ORS. And I said, wait a minute, Your Honor. I said, I would like to address as the witness the fact that in the Oregon Driver's Manual of 2022 to 2023, this is the manual we have to study before we get our driver's test. Now, you can talk about how driving should not be turned into a privilege. It's a right. And I agree with you all. But we've all been kind of suckered into this system, just like we've been suckered into other things over the last 150 years. But you have this thing here that says, to operate a motor vehicle on highways or premises open to the public in Oregon, you must possess a valid driving privilege. This manual only addresses requirements for obtaining a Class C non-commercial driving privilege. And then for current information, for fees, drive tests, whatever, you go to this. Okay, so this is a driving manual that gives you basically all the rules of the road. I'm going to say it again. All the rules of the road. And your test is going to be based on questions they pull out of this manual. Now, is anywhere in this manual anything that they have done on the side? When I say on the side, that means something that the average American Oregonian, Californian citizen would not know or understand. What they call in Oregon, ORS, Oregon Revised Statutes. No, There's nothing in here like here. There is something on the testing. There's something on signs and traffic signals. There's something on lane travel. There is something on turns and intersections, what you can and cannot do, railroad crossings, light rail, streetcars sharing the road, the different signs you better know how to memorize to know what they all mean, other important information, safe and responsible driving. And it has everything in there you better know how to do or you won't pass your driver's test, okay? So I asked the judge to go to page 19 of this Oregon driver's manual dated 2022-23. And I said, Your Honor, on page 19, I said, it says here, solid white line, and I'm quoting, folks, can be used for an edge or fog line to help drivers to stay on the road. Let me read it again. Solid white line can be used for an edge or fog line to help drivers to stay on the road. Now, if you're in town or on the freeway, a wide solid white line can also be, quote, used to direct traffic into specific lanes, such as turn lanes, or to separate bike lanes from other traffic lanes. Or in the case of the freeway or highway, quote, crossing a wide solid white line is permitted but discouraged. Let me read that again. It's in the Oregon driver's manual that you have to memorize before you take your test. And it says crossing a wide solid white line is permitted but discouraged. And that's on page 19 of this year's manual. Tried to bring that up to her. You know what she said? She says, I don't care about the driver's manual. I don't care about basically the rules of the road that you guys have all studied and to get your driver's test and in order to pass to get your privilege for your driver's license. I don't care about that. I'm going with Oregon revised statutes. And the Oregon revised statute says this, that, you know, it's called failure to maintain in the same lane. Do you see what's going on here? So when I called back my friend after it was all over and he said, oh my gosh, first of all, you never plead guilty or not guilty. That's right away putting yourself in their jurisdiction where they can make rules on you. Number two, they don't care about the facts. They don't care about the truth. They don't care about the circumstances leading up to that or the extenuating circumstances. They don't care that you were a very safe driver and you were trying to check in your mirrors to see if the police officer wanted to pass you or not. They don't care about that. They have their own little laws, or in this case, their little Oregon revised statutes, and they're going to find you guilty no matter what you did or didn't do. So that kind of explained why she basically gave the finger to the Oregon driver's manual that says Driver and Motor Vehicle Services and Oregon Driver's Manual. You need to know this and go by these rules, these regulations, and these rules in order to get your driver's license. But oh no, the fact that we did not challenge the jurisdiction, that we are private citizens traveling from A to B, we didn't cause any harm. We weren't driving drunk. We weren't driving erratically. We never left the right lane. The tires touched once or twice in 5 seconds, touched on the white fog line. The fact is that in their book, this is how to get revenue. So we're going to reduce it from, it was supposed to be $285. And then somehow she goes, well, I'm going to reduce it in half. What do you mean in half? Originally it was $285. Now, why are you going to reduce it in half and say it's $220? Are you trying to tell me now it was actually going to cost $440 for our tires touching a white line? Are you kidding me already? So I want you folks to understand is that if you get pulled over because you've been speeding, okay, I can see that one. Or you're driving drunk, I can see that one. But to pull you over because your tires briefly touched the fog line, to me, that's pushing the envelope. And with a judge who's, you know, a former lawyer telling you that I don't care what rules you learned how to drive, and I don't care that you're following the Oregon driver's manual, And I don't care that you're following all the rules that you had to take a test to get your driver's license. I'm just going to ignore all that. I'm going to ignore page 19 that says, under the state of Oregon, quote, crossing a wide, solid white line is permitted but discouraged. So, folks, of course, there's going to be more to this saga and this story in the days ahead. But I'm also going to be probably dealing with this this young whippersnapper, highway patrol officer, that obviously he hasn't been doing it for very long. He was very, very up on his ego, kind of a little bit belligerent. Got really nasty when he realized I was videotaping him when he walked up to our vehicle. So he wanted me to know he was videotaping us as well. The arrogance. Now, I love law enforcement officers, okay? I support the blue, and I support all those people in uniform. But some of these young people, I tell you, it's a good thing he was in uniform, because I had a feeling at that moment, God, I wanted to turn him over my knee and I wanted to spank him. You know, that's how I felt, because it was so obvious that this was harassment and retaliatory because of what happened at the rest stop. And the judge knew it too, and shame on her. Okay. She was filling in for another judge who was sick today, but shame on her. She knew darn well that this was retaliatory. Now, the case before us, the man showed up on his Zoom traffic ticket issue, and the law enforcement officer that had pulled him over didn't show up. So she dismissed his entire case and without prejudice. And here we bothered to write a 3-page letter, explain the whole situation. We were respectful of the trooper. We were respectful of her. You know, the letters were signed and notarized and everything. Everything was legal beagle. And it was so obvious that what she was trying to tell us is that I don't care what the Oregon driver's rules are. I'm going to ignore that. I'm going to ignore the fact that you didn't commit a violation, because we're going to put you under our jurisdiction of the ORS, and therefore then I can find you guilty. So I just want you guys to understand that, you know, you got to be very careful out there and make sure that you cross your T's and dot your I's and document everything. I mean, document everything. And I guess if what my friend Des said is, whatever you do, do not plead guilty or not guilty, because then you're putting yourself in their jurisdiction. What you do is you plead yourself as persona, which is basically along the lines of you're your own person and you're not in their jurisdiction. You're a private citizen, and you're not going to place yourself in their jurisdiction, which means you're not going to go into their courtroom, and you're not going to do what we did this morning, because we were naive. We didn't understand that they were yanking us into their jurisdiction under the ORS, and that they weren't even going to consider that all we as people know is the driver's manual that we had to memorize and learn before we could pass the test. And that therefore the rules that we study in this driver's manual don't apply in their own little private world, their little kingdom, okay? So probably enough of that, right, Maggie Rose? We are going to talk about the winning the all-out war against America's children in a minute. But I want you all to know that Republic Broadcasting Network is purely listener-supported. We're asking you please to go into the website, look at who our sponsors are, look at those people that are helping support us here, and please patronize them. If there's a product you see there, inquire about it, look into it, and just know that whatever you're doing to purchase any products that are being put out there by our sponsors, you're helping Republic Broadcasting Network at the same time. Now, there is an article that came out, Winning the All-Out War Against America's Children. And so the first thing I want to do is I want to play something that, while I'm going to be pulling that up, I want to play something that is very important that a lot of people are understanding that's happening in this country right now. And they know that there's some very illegal things that are going on. And one of those things that's happening is that we are finding out that Bill Gates has been up to his tricks again. And as far as the immunizations go, these vaccinations, we know that Project Veritas, you've all heard that they went undercover and there was a guy who's the director of Pfizer, and that this guy was thinking he was on a date with another guy. And three times he met with this undercover reporter, and he's boasting about the different things that Pfizer's doing. And Project Veritas caught that. okay? And then after Project Veritas exposed it to the world, they basically, from what I'm understanding, they kind of got deplatformed. So I wanted to play that for you.
Contradict expert consensus. These were not...
Oh, let me see here. Shoot, I had it. I'm going to try it again.
These were not our claims. These are the claims of a director at Pfizer. I really think it's third world that big, massive corporations team up with big tech monopolies to target journalism in these United States. It's just wrong. And I think they'll regret doing this. We know that there are sources at Pfizer today that tell us that Pfizer is going through turmoil today. A lot of people talking about what they're doing inside, their data control mode. There's more information coming out. Nothing stops about the attacks.
So let's go ahead and let's see if you can hear that one more time.
YouTube just took down our Pfizer expose. It had 800,000 views. YouTube gave us a strike and will not let us post for a week. And it gave us this reason. Listen to this. Medical misinformation. YouTube doesn't allow claims about COVID-19 vaccinations that contradict expert consensus from local health authorities or WHO. Doesn't allow claims about COVID that contradict expert consensus. These were not our claims. These are the claims of a director at Pfizer. I really think it's third world that big, massive corporations team up with big tech monopolies to target journalism in these United States. It's just wrong. And I think they'll regret doing this. We know that there are sources at Pfizer today that tell us that Pfizer is going through turmoil today. A lot of people talking about what they're doing inside their data control mode. There's more information coming out.
Now, let me tell you, I am a little bit worried about this guy, Jordan, a walker who, what's the old saying from World War II, loose lips sink ships? Well, we saw what happened to Brandy Vaughan down in Santa Barbara, who used to work for Merrick, and discovered that some of their medications were actually killing people, causing strokes and heart attacks. And she was very vocal about Big Pharma, and we believe that she was assassinated. We believe that the coroner himself was basically blackmailed into saying she died from natural causes. A young woman like that with a child under the age of 14, as young as she was, doesn't die from natural causes, and he wouldn't even state what they were. I am concerned about Jordan Walker, that he is going to be disappeared because of the fact that now they're trying to do damage control at Pfizer. They've been doing not only Gang of Function, but if you watch the video of Project Veritas, they have actually been experimenting how they can further mutate this bioweapon that they've taken the coronavirus, which means cold or flu, and they've taken it and they bioweaponized it, and now they want to find a way of mutating. And he was talking about how they're actually putting in a monkey and then taking from that monkey to another monkey. I mean, horrific things he was talking about. And then when he got caught, he's telling James O'Keefe of Project Veritas, oh, you know, I was lying. I was just trying to impress my date. You know, I was a liar. I was just lying to impress him. Oh, really, Mr. Walker? But what I'm concerned now is he's going to end up dead under mysterious circumstances. If not within the next few days or the next few weeks, within the next year or two, he's going to end up being taken out. And even his family members will, if they try to pursue any of this, they will also be threatened with their lives, or they will be, as we call it, disappeared. Okay? So I am truly, sincerely, on one hand, I'm grateful that Project Veritas caught Jordan Walker like they did, but I'm also terrified that this man is going to be murdered by one of the assassinations that's hired out by the big pharmaceutical companies, because that's what they do. They have their own team of assassins who've been known to take down holistic doctors, as many as 10 or 15 holistic doctors in 1 month. Because you see how they make their money coming back in all the time, you know, sending the money keeps coming in by keeping us sick. They want us sick. And they want to help Bill Gates with his depopulation agenda of killing 90% of the world's population in the next 8 years by these vaccines. Bill Gates said, how do we depopulate the world's population by 90% by the year 2030? Well, one of the things on his list was vaccines. And didn't any of you catch that? Come on. How did that go over your heads? How can the liberal relatives and friends of yours and your neighbors out there, liberal, not hear this, not see this? They want to bury their heads in the sand because they can't believe that good old Americans would do this to good old Americans. Well, excuse me, you better wake up and smell the roses, because that is exactly what they've been doing for decades. For decades. And I am worried very much for the health and welfare of Mr. Jordan Walker. Now, this article here that just came out in the Roseburg Beacon, winning the all-out war against America's children. There's so much I want to be able to get done, and we can't do it in 1 hour. But it says here, of all the shared values Americans have held sacred over the centuries, one of the most important has been the conviction that our children are precious, innocent, literally a gift from God, to be cherished and protected at all costs. Why then in today's America are so many adults destroying children in a dizzying variety of ways, from aborting them right up to the very moment of their natural birth, to killing them after they're born, to sexualizing them virtually from birth? Harvard University now teaches a course on infants who are LGBTQIA+, quote-unquote queer and or quote-unquote asexual, to even injecting them with an experimental vaccine that's proven to be both ineffective and dangerous, to even transporting 2- and 3-year-olds to, quote, drag queen story hour, unquote, events, to glorifying mentally ill, demonically possessed men dressed as women, some with criminal histories of child sexual abuse, who indoctrinate America's next generation with the fantastical stories about heroic LGBT characters. And that's just the abuse heaped on infants and toddlers. As they grow older, America's children are systematically being sexualized in government and public school classrooms and after school LGBT, quote, support clubs, unquote, as well as by the ambiguous purple-haired, heavily pierced transgender recruiters on a social media platforms like TikTok. Folks, Maggie Rose discovered a long time ago that TikTok was created by the Red Chinese Communist Party in China and is owned by Communist China. Why are your young people being allowed to use TikTok? The article goes on to say, as a direct consequence, many children are seduced into, quote, identifying, unquote, as the opposite gender or a brand new imaginary gender. And although too young to drive or vote, they're encouraged or convinced and permitted by grown-ups to take powerful drugs and hormones. Now, the article goes on, folks, but think about it a moment. Is this not country not going into something which would be a modern-day Gomorrah? Look what happened way back then when that city, that town became so evil and so perverse. What does it say in the Bible that God did? Now, you know, we can believe that that's a true story, and they're finding evidence now that something did happen. But look at how evil our society is becoming now, because we've got adults out there that have been allowed to become in leadership positions, and the only thing we can guess is they must be possessed. How could they do this to children, especially if they've had children of their own, or if they have nephews or nieces or grandchildren? How could they support this? This goes beyond wokeism and equality under the law. Here's another one. Oregon is launching a hotline to facilitate killing babies and abortions. And they call it abortion on demand and without apology. Again, Oregon launches hotline to facilitate killing babies and abortion. They call it abortion on demand and without apology. This article was written by Michaela Bilger, and it says here, quote, Democrat-run states like Oregon are actively encouraging women to kill their own children in abortions. On Monday, Oregon Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum launched a new abortion hotline to provide free legal advice and referrals to abortion facilities for anyone in or out of the state who wants an abortion. The Associated Press reports, Rosenblum's announcement made it clear that the initiative especially is directed towards women in neighboring Idaho, which protects unborn babies by banning abortions. Quote, the hotline will fill an important need in our state of Oregon for callers to understand the status of our reproductive health laws, including issues related to abortion access, unquote, she said in a statement. Quote, this is especially important because we share a border with Idaho, which has a near total abortion ban, unquote. According to the report, callers will be connected to an Oregon lawyer for free legal advice within 48 hours and be provided with contact information for abortion facilities and pro-abortion groups that help pay travel, cost, meals, and other expenses to help women abort their unborn babies. Folks, this is the state I live in. This is horrific. The legal advice only pertains to Oregon law, which Rosenblum's office bragged has, quote, no gestational limits, no waiting periods, and medication abortion or abortion pills can be accessed by mail. Immigration status or ability to pay does not prevent someone from accessing abortion in Oregon, unquote. In other words, abortions are also taxpayer funded. The State Department of Justice and the Token Corp law firm are leading the new project, but other law firms are also involved, including Markowitz, Herbold, Perkins, Corey, Stoll, Rivas, McDonnell, Rackner, Gibson, and Pickett, Dumigan, McCall, according to the department. Molly Honorer, a lawyer with Markowitz Herbold, told the Associated Press that they expect to receive questions primarily from women in states where abortions are illegal. However, Honorer said they plan to answer questions from abortion workers too. Democrat leaders in New York and Delaware recently launched similar abortion hotlines in their states, the Associated Press reports. These states and others are also dumping tens of millions of dollars into training more abortionists, creating grants for abortion facilities to increase security, paying travel expenses for women to abort their unborn babies, and more. In contrast, pro-life advocates and lawmakers are ramping up efforts to help pregnant and parenting families in need. Pregnancy resource centers and maternity homes are expanding housing, financial, material, and emotional support for families, and many pro-life Republican-led states are working to expand Medicaid for new mothers and babies. Folks, here's another one. Pro-life Democrats protest at the Democrat Party headquarters. Stop pushing baby genocide again. Pro-life Democrats protesting at Democrat Party headquarters are saying stop pushing baby genocide. Coinciding with two new polls showing growing support for abortion limits, pro-life Democrats and progressives held a rally Wednesday outside the Democrat National Committee headquarters to urge their party leaders to rethink their radical pro-abortion position. The Democrat Party platform is extreme and out of touch with most Americans, and recently its leaders have refused to even listen to Democrats who believe that unborn babies deserve protections and care. So the pro-life advocates with Democrats for Life, Progressive Anti-Abortion Uprising, PAAU, and Pro-Life San Francisco showed up outside the Washington, D.C. headquarters this week with signs urging the party to be pro-life for the whole life and end the baby genocide. One PAAU advocate held a sign that read, quote, DNC, Democrat National Committee, exploits prenatal people for power, unquote, as they displayed the fetal model of what appears to be a second trimester baby. Kristen Day, the executive director for and of Democrats for Life, said the request to meet with the DNC chairman, Jamie Harrison, had been ignored for years. Quote, he never answered our call for ways to further build the party, and his arrogance is costing us seats, unquote, Day said. An analysis by Democrats for Life, director of analytics, J.T. Kopaczynski, found Democrats lost 919 seats between 2010 and 2016 as the party grew more radical on abortion. In 2016, the party adopted a new platform that supports abortions without limits and calls for forcing Americans to fund elective abortions with their own tax dollars. Polls consistently show strong public opposition, folks, to this very issue, all right? Strong, strong opposition to what is going on here in this country with the killing of babies. So now even Democrats are saying this has gone too far. Taxpayers don't want to be funding abortions. And two new polls this week found growing support for legal protections for unborn babies. A Marxist college poll found 69% of Americans support limiting or banning abortions, up from 62% in June. So that is just one more issue that is now coming to the forefront, folks. Also want to let you know, before the show ends here, protesters were swarming Brett Kavanaugh. Remember the justice, Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh? Protesters were swarming Brett Kavanaugh's house after dark, chanting, "Let's cut his time short." Now, this just happened recently, folks. Pro-abortion activists protested outside Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh's home Sunday on the 50th anniversary of Roe versus Wade, shouting, quote, "Rapists should not rule the court," unquote. The anniversary falls only days after thousands of pro-life activists gathered in Washington, D.C. to celebrate the Supreme Court overturning Roe versus in the depths of Jackson Women's Health Organization 2022. So, folks, the leftist progressives, the violent Antifa Black Lives Matter, they're not going to quit. I did want to say something. We weren't able to do it last week. This is the end of the show. I would like us all please to remember last week, the 26th of January, was the anniversary of the assassination of my personal friend, Robert Lavoie Finnegan, gunned down on orders of Kate Brown, then governor of Oregon, and her state troopers, her highway patrol state troopers. They gunned him down because they believed it was taking the head off the snake, because he was standing for the Constitution of the United States. He was standing for property rights, for land rights, and he was standing for the Hammonds, who had been unjustly sent back to jail again. You're not supposed to be tried for the same thing twice. And they were not guilty of what they were being accused of. But after getting out of jail, then somebody decided, we want their land, we want their ranch, so we're going to send them back to jail for a few more years. So many people came from around the country to stand with the Hammonds, with Stephen Dwight and with his wife, Susie. And Robert Lavoie Finnegan was on his way to John Day, Oregon, which is in Grant County, to meet with the constitutional sheriff to talk about these issues and meet with the ranchers and farmers regarding their constitutional rights. And there was an illegal dead man's blockade that was set up by the state of Oregon, state troopers, and the FBI. And when he got out of his vehicle with his hands up in the air, they tased him from the front and shot him three times in the back, murdering him in cold blood. Okay, so I want us to remember Robert Lavoie Finnegan, cowboy, father, grandfather, hero to so many people. As he said, it matters how you stand. There are some things more important than life itself. And he took a stand for all of us. So let's remember him. He died just around his birthday a few years ago on January the 26th. And last week was the anniversary of the murder, the assassination of Robert Lavoie Finnegan. His murder has never been brought to trial. The different courts, both federal and state, have been finding every way they possibly could to deny Janet Finnegan and the Patriots the right to have this case tried. In fact, the people that were responsible for his assassination have all been promoted and have been moved to other locations. So they've been rewarded for basically murdering a man in cold blood. And all he was doing was driving. It was not a traffic stop. He was meeting all the rules of the road, and he was out in the middle of the woods driving through this, you know, the snow-packed area, and he was heading 2 hours to Grant County, and they had to cut him down before he got there. They could not let him get there. So, again, folks, please remember Robert Lavoie Finnegan in your prayers. And we'll be back with you on Friday with another edition of The Edge of Darkness, Jeffrey Bennett Show. Make sure you tune in for Jeffrey Bennett tomorrow and on Tuesday and on Wednesday. Thursday. And then I'll be back with you guys on Friday. This is Maggie Rose. God bless and good night.
Wounded skies above say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time. Do the Lord. Do you think we have time? Do you? The empty hand, oh, we hold on to what you can. And charity, charity is the coat you wear twice a year. Yeah, this is the year of the guilty man. Your television takes a stand, and you find that what was over there is over here. So you scream from behind your door, say what's mine is mine and not yours. I may have too much, but I'll take my chance and say I sang it 20 years and a day. There's nothing changed, the human race found some other guy and walked into the flames. It's hard to love. Jesus has so much to hate. Hanging on to a wall, there is no hope to speak out. In the wounded skies above say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time.
Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.